Ever been in a situation so bad you felt like you had no choice but to break the law, like your back was truly against the wall?
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that feeling, at least hypothetically. But what happens when that conflict plays out in a prison?
That's exactly what we're digging into today. It's a fascinating case out of Iowa State v. Reese.
Oh, this one's a classic. I remember studying this in law school. It really gets to the heart of the necessity defense, right? Like, can a prisoner ever justify escaping if they're facing serious harm inside?
Right. On the one hand, we've got the state's interest in keeping prisoners incarcerated, maintaining order. But on the other hand, what happens when the prison itself becomes dangerous?
Exactly. So in this deep dive, we're going to examine this tension by really dissecting the Reese case, and we're going to be looking at a couple of other important legal sources along the way.
We'll be diving into the actual Iowa Supreme Court decision, the precedent set by a really important California case, People v. Loverkamp, and even taking a look at the dissenting opinion in Reese itself.
It's going to be a wild ride. So, to set the stage, this case takes us back to 1977, the Iowa State Penitentiary.
Not exactly known for its five-star accommodations.
Right, not a place you'd want to spend your vacation. And things were particularly bad in March of 77, seriously understaffed. The reports indicate there were 18 fewer employees than authorized. Imagine the strain on the system.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. And that understaffing was especially noticeable in Reese's cell house. Five guards for something like 300 inmates. Talk about a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely. It creates this environment where even the most basic level of safety and security becomes questionable. And it's within this powder keg that Michael Reese, the inmate at the center of this case, finds himself facing a very specific and terrifying threat.
From another inmate known only as the lifer in the court records. And it wasn't just threats, right? This escalated into actual violence.
Tragically, yes.
Oh.
On March 26th, Reese is sexually assaulted by this other inmate. So we're not talking about hypothetical danger here, but a real and brutal attack.
And this is where things get really interesting legally. Reese doesn't just immediately make a run for it. He actually tries to work within the system first, doesn't he?
He does, and this is a crucial part of his later argument. The records indicate that he reached out to both his counselor and even the penitentiary psychiatrist.
So he's actively trying to report the danger, trying to get help from the authorities within the prison.
Exactly, but seemingly to no avail. And this lack of response, this apparent failure of the system to protect him, becomes a key piece of his legal argument.
It seems like he's trapped between a rock and a hard place.
Right. And 3 days after the assault on March 29th, Reese makes his move. He escapes.
So he makes it outside the prison walls. What happens next?
Well, this is where the timeline becomes absolutely critical to the legal analysis. Reese is apprehended over 24 hours later. He's found hiding in a shed about 8 miles from the penitentiary.
So he didn't immediately turn himself in.
No. And that delay, that period of hiding, ends up being the crux of the legal battle that unfolds.
So Reese is obviously charged with escape, found guilty at trial, but then things take a surprising turn.
Yeah, this case ping-pongs through the courts a bit. The Iowa Court of Appeals actually reverses the trial court's decision.
They find that the jury should have been instructed differently on this whole concept of the necessity defense, right?
Exactly. They believe the jury should have been given the opportunity to consider whether Reese's escape was justified under the circumstances.
So for a moment, it looks like Reese might actually get off.
Right. But then the Iowa Supreme Court steps in and ultimately reinstates the conviction.
High stakes legal drama. So all this hinges on this necessity defense. Can you break down what that actually means, legally speaking?
Well, the basic idea behind the necessity defense is that sometimes breaking the law can be justified if it's done to prevent an even greater harm. It's essentially choosing the lesser of two evils when you're in a really impossible situation.
Like that classic example, right? You're lost in a blizzard, freezing to death. You break into a cabin to survive.
Exactly. The law recognizes that sometimes survival instincts and basic human needs outweigh strict adherence to the letter of the law. But applying that to a prison escape, that's where things get tricky.
Yeah, you can't just have prisoners running around claiming necessity every time they face some discomfort.
Definitely. The courts have to balance individual rights with maintaining order and security in the prison system. And that's where this really important case, People v. Loverkamp, comes in.
This is the one from California that sets the precedent for Reese's case.
Right. Loverkamp establishes a very specific five-part test that prisoners have to meet if they're going to claim necessity for escaping. And these conditions are strict.
Okay, let's walk through these five conditions one by one.
Yeah.
What's the first hurdle a prisoner has to clear.
So the first condition is that there has to be a specific threat of death, forcible sexual attack, or substantial bodily injury. And this threat has to be immediate.
Not some vague fear or something that happened a long time ago. It has to be a clear and present danger.
Exactly. Now, the second condition is really interesting, especially in Reese's case. It says there has to be no time for a complaint to the authorities or a history of futile complaints.
This directly relates to Reese's attempts to reach out to his counselor and the psychiatrist.
Right. The question becomes, did he genuinely exhaust all his options within the system?
Okay, what's the third condition?
The third one states that there can't be any time or opportunity to resort to the courts.
So even if a prisoner feels like they're in immediate danger, there's an expectation that they should try to pursue legal avenues for protection.
Right. And this can be a really tough one to meet, especially within the confines of prison.
On to condition number four. This one seems to focus on the actual escape itself, not just the reason for it.
Exactly. The fourth condition says that no force or violence can be used against prison personnel or other innocent people during the escape.
So the escape itself can't create further harm.
Right. And finally, we get to the fifth, and in Reese's case, the most fatal condition.
The one that ultimately trips him up.
Right. The fifth condition states that the prisoner has to immediately report to the authorities once they reach a position of safety.
And Reese, he hides for over 24 hours.
Exactly. And the majority of the Iowa Supreme Court, led by Justice McGivern, really hangs their hat on this point. They say this immediate surrender is absolutely crucial.
They're worried that relaxing this requirement would open the floodgates, right? You'd have prisoners escaping in the drop of a hat, claiming necessity.
That's their concern. They argue that strict adherence to these five conditions is necessary to maintain order in prisons to prevent a complete breakdown of the system.
So they prioritize the integrity of the prison system over Reese's individual claims. But of course, it's not unanimous. We have Justice McCormick's dissenting opinion.
Right. And McCormick really takes issue with the rigidity of the Leverkamp test. He doesn't believe these five conditions should be treated as ironclad, all-or-nothing requirements.
He thinks the jury should have been allowed to weigh all the evidence, including Reese's attempts to seek help and the severity of the threat he faced.
Exactly. He argues that the jury is best equipped to decide whether, under the totality of the circumstances, Reese's actions were truly necessary. He even suggests that the majority opinion is essentially rewriting the crime of escape, adding these conditions after the fact.
And this gets into this really interesting legal question of who has the burden of proof when a defendant claims necessity.
Right. So the defendant initially has the burden of producing enough evidence to even raise the question of necessity. Then the burden shifts to the prosecution to disprove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
In Reese's case, the majority felt that his failure to immediately surrender meant he didn't even meet that initial burden.
Yeah, that's their reasoning. And it really highlights this tension that runs throughout the case. You've got the safety and well-being of individuals within the prison system, even those who are incarcerated.
And then you have the need to maintain order, security, the integrity of the entire system.
Exactly. And it's a tough balance. The Reese case really forces us to confront those tough questions.
So what's the bottom line for all our law students out there? What should they take away from State v. Reese and this whole Leverkamp test?
The biggest takeaway is that the necessity defense, especially in prison escapes, is very narrowly applied. Even in a situation where someone perceives a real and immediate threat, they have to meet those five strict criteria, particularly that immediate surrender requirement. It's a high bar, and the courts aren't messing around.
So did Reese's desperate situation justify his escape in the eyes of the Iowa Supreme Court? No. They say those Leverkamp conditions, particularly the immediate reporting, were non-negotiable.
But it leaves us with a real head-scratcher, right? What happens when the system that's supposed to protect people, even prisoners, fails? Should there be exceptions to these hard and fast rules? Like McCormick argued, are there situations where the legal alternatives are just an illusion?
Really makes you think. And that's what we're all about here, right? Sparking those tough conversations. If you want to dive deeper into all this, we encourage you to look at how the necessity defense plays out in other areas of law. Reese is a fantastic example of just how complex and nuanced our legal system can be.
Absolutely. It's about more than just black and white rules. It's about grappling with those gray areas, those tough cases where the answer isn't always clear cut.
And on that note, we'll leave you to ponder. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.
See you then.